Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 3, Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal, Text 35. Translation. O my Lord, O best of the givers of benediction, if you will kindly grant me the benediction I desire, please let me not meet death from any of the living entities created by you. Purport. After being created from the navel of Garbhadakshai Vishnu, Lord Brahma, the original created living being within the universe, created many other types of living entities to reside in this universe. Therefore, from the beginning of creation, the living entities were born of a superior living entity. Ultimately, Krishna is the supreme living being, the father of all others. Aham Bija Pradapita. He is the sea-giving father of all living entities. Thus far, Hiranyakashipu has adored Lord Brahma as the supreme personality of Godhead and has expected to become immortal by the benediction of Lord Brahma. Now, however, having come to understand that even Lord Brahma is not immortal, because at the end of the millennium, Lord Brahma will also die, Hiranyakashipu is very carefully asking him for benedictions that will almost be as good as immortality. His first proposal is that he not be killed by any of the different forms of living entities created by Lord Brahma within this material world. Om agana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. We were speaking yesterday about how Lord Brahma warned Hiranyakashipu that the benedictions you're asking for are going to be a lot of trouble. But of course, Hiranyakashipu did not in any way acknowledge the warnings of Brahma. He was focused upon power. And yesterday we spoke about how you can see each individual living entity's quest in this world as one for getting power. And because you have to deal with other persons, you have to make some compromises, you have to make some alliances. Okay, you're favorable to me, I'm favorable to you, let's go for the power together. I won't get in your way, you won't get in my way, and in fact, we might help each other to get more power. So what is that power all about? In our innocence, self-ascribed innocence, we think that power means getting political power or massive financial power. But actually, just the attempt to enjoy this material world is an attempt for power. Therefore, as we also discussed yesterday, where is our innocence? As long as we are infected by the desire for material enjoyment, we're going to be on a power trip. And we'll be frustrated also, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, that from lust there must be frustration. Why? Because lust can never be fulfilled. So the question is, how many lifetimes does it take for us to learn that? The fire of lust that burns within the conditioned soul. That means not only lust for flesh, but lust for utilizing material nature for our own pleasure. As long as that's there, there can't be any peace. But we all want peace. We all want to have peace of mind, freedom from anxiety. But when will we add 1 + 1 = 2? That as long as I have desires for material enjoyment, as long as I see this world as a place for my fulfillment, I'll never be peaceful. So, again, there's nothing innocent about our material existence. We have criminal desires. And it takes us quite some purification to understand that we'll never be peaceful as long as we don't deal with the seed of material enjoyment that is so much troubling us. Hiranyakashipu is the classic example of someone who actually fulfilled all his material desires, but he was completely dissatisfied. And in fact, he became mad. Not only was he envious of Vishnu, but he was also envious of his own little boy. He became mad by material opulence. This is something that requires some thought to understand, because we may naturally consider that material opulence is harmless. What's wrong with having it? But Krishna knows better how to take care of his devotees. He knows that the effect of material opulence maddens you. Your attachment for material life increases. Your belief in the myth of material progress increases. So therefore, Krishna is not eager that his devotees acquire material opulence, unless it clearly can be used in Krishna's service. I remember Srila Prabhupada writing how Krishna is not a poor man. He can give the devotee the whole United States of America, but he wants to see, are we pure? In other words, can we handle it? Are the children mature enough to handle the inheritance? Later in the seventh canto, you're going to hear about Prahlad Maharaj being apparently tempted by Lord Nrisingadev. Lord Nrisingadev is going to tell Prahlad, this is after Hiranyakashipu is killed, and this is after Prahlad offers his monumental prayers. Lord Nrisingadev is going to say, it is my pastime to fulfill everyone's desires. And you have pleased me, so therefore, Prahlad, you may ask of me anything you want. Now just think if you were in that position. You could ask for anything you want. Immediately we could feel that urge for power come through us. Yes. What will make my day, my year, my life? Will we ask for pure devotion? Lord Nrisingadev said, Prahlad, no one who comes in contact with me is disappointed. Ask whatever you like. It's my lila. It's my thing to fulfill desires. And what was Prahlad's response? My lord, let's go over my family background. Let's consider where I'm coming from, which side of the tracks I was born on. My father is the greatest demon. My family line, they're all the suras. I beg you, my lord, please don't tempt me with material benedictions. I'll easily fall down. But then Prahlad Maharaj considered, you would never do anything that's not beneficial for your devotees. Sometimes we think that Krishna is making bhakti so difficult for us, and he's always trying to throw us off the path of bhakti and throw impediments in our way. Why doesn't Krishna make it easy for us? Why does bhakti sometimes have to be such a challenge? But Prahlad says differently. He says that you would never do anything that would be unbeneficial for your devotee. So then Prahlad concludes, so why are you asking me to take a material benediction? Because you have sent me into this world to display the qualities of a pure devotee. So you're not trapping me. You are trying to show the qualities of pure devotion so everyone can benefit. And then Prahlad Maharaj goes on to say that my desire is simply to be your unconditional servant. I have no other desire than this, just to be your servant. The pure servant never wants any material benefit from the master. And also, the pure master never offers benedictions to his servant just so the master can maintain his prestige as the giver of benediction. We have no other relationship than pure bhakti. And I want that to be forever, eternally. So just see the difference between the son, Prahlad, and his father, Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu is ready not only to lord it over this planet, but he's ready to lord it over the entire universe. So, what actually is his problem? We need to face the realities of the total effect brought about by the seed of material enjoyment. Of course, Hiranyakashipu, as we know, is actually a devotee. But he is, for real, as a demon. We can't forget that. He's acting fully as the real thing, the real asura. And he's showing what happens when we don't deal with ourselves. He refused to deal with his issues, as they say. Whereas his son told him, as a five-year-old boy, Prahlad told him, look, you've conquered all the directions, but you haven't conquered your own senses. So how do you expect to be peaceful? Prahlad understood that. Whereas Hiranyakashipu couldn't deal with himself. So that brings us to the point of what is real wealth. Hiranyakashipu had no idea. Prahlad had a complete idea. Let's go to Krishna Lila, to the 10th canto. Prichit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami the classic question. Lord Narayan has as his consort the goddess of fortune. They reside in Vaikuntha with unlimited wealth. So then why is it that the devotees of Lord Narayan sometimes are seen to not have any material opulence? Whereas the devotees of Lord Shiva, he doesn't have a house. He doesn't build a house for his wife. He lives under a tree. He's decorated with ashes and skulls. Sometimes he lays in the snow in the Himalaya mountains. But his devotees are often seen to have material opulence. So Prichit Maharaj wants to know, what's going on here? Is it that Krishna doesn't know how to take care of his devotees? Sometimes we feel like that. Is Krishna really caring for me? Is he really making it so that I can make spiritual advancement and attain him? Does he care? So Prichit Maharaj wants to clear this issue out. And the way Shukadeva Goswami answers it is by referring to a discussion between Yudhisthira Maharaj and Krishna. Yudhisthira Maharaj asks Krishna the same thing. And it's an important issue for us to deal with because sometimes we're insecure in our bhakti. What will my future be? What's really going to happen? I mean, I know about the religious beliefs, but what's really going to happen? And when is it going to happen? So, just as Prichit Maharaj wanted to clear up this issue, so did Yudhisthira Maharaj. And when Yudhisthira Maharaj asked that question, the same question, about the devotees of Lord Shiva, devotees of Lord Narayan, when he asked that same question, Krishna answered quite directly, Yasyaham Anigranami Harishye Taddanam Shanai. I have a way of giving special mercy. If the devotee is sincere, and I know that, but at the same time the devotee is a bit too attached to various things of material existence, I give my special mercy. I take everything away. So this makes us tremble. Oh, that's exactly what I was afraid of. Why can't it be the opposite? That when I see my devotees sincere, I give him lots of material opulence. Give him lots of things to be attached to. Why can't it be that way? We need to understand what is real wealth. Otherwise, we'll have a grudge against Krishna, unconsciously or consciously. We'll have a hard spot in our heart. And that hard spot in the heart will interfere with our chanting, our service to Krishna. There'll be resentment. You know, just like sometimes children are resentful of their parents. I'll never forget one time I was an 8-year-old kid, and my mother sent me with some relatives from New York to visit Washington, D.C. And so she gave me like $10. I was an 8-year-old kid for $10. Wow. So she gave me the money to tour Washington, D.C., see the monuments and the White House and all that stuff. So I got to Washington, D.C., and I had a great idea as an 8-year-old kid. I won't use the money for public transport. I'll walk all around Washington, D.C. and see all the sights. And then when I get back to New York, I'll have so much money because I won't have spent the money. So I did that. I walked to the Washington Monument. I walked to the White House, saw all the sights, and basically just spent $2 out of the 10. So then I got back to New York, and I was home, and my mother comes up to me and says, "So, about that money I gave you, do you have anything left?" I gave you the money to spend on sightseeing in Washington, D.C. If you have something left, you should, return it to me. I said, "Oh, no." This is nonsense. So I never forgot that. Even now, my mother is 83, and I always remind her, "You took my money when I was 8 years old." I walked all over Washington, D.C. to save every penny, and you took it. She said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'll never do it again." So I couldn't get over it. That's unfair. And she's supposed to be the loving parent. I never got over it. There was another time. I was 14. I'm just giving these examples so we can see how we have a problem with Krishna. That's the main point. But I'm trying to bring it down to the level, out of the sky and down to the level where we can actually see what's going on in our heart. So I was 14, and I got a letter from a girl. And the letter was it was like one of the, popular songs of the time, It was full of this and that. So I read the letter. Wow. This is what it's all about. And I carefully put the letter on top of a big wardrobe closet. And every day I come home from school and, yes. And I put the letter very carefully on top of the wardrobe closet. One day I came back from school and I noticed the letter was maybe a quarter of an inch away from where I put it. And I began to think, who goes on top of wardrobe closets to clean? That's right. So I asked her, "Did you read my letter?" "What letter?" "Oh, I don't know what you're talking about." "What letter?" "Come on, mother, did you read my letter?" "I don't know what you're talking about." But I knew she wasn't telling the truth. I never let her forget that one also. Again, she admitted, okay. 20 years later, she admitted she did it. I was wrong. I'll never tell untruth to a child again. And of course, she had my welfare. at heart, and now I appreciate it. You know, she wanted to make sure, you know, I my teenage years aren't ruined, you know. So her intentions were pure, but I took it as what? This is nonsense. My teenage love letter. So we have the same attitude towards Krishna. And that's why Yudhisthira is asking that question to Krishna. And that's why Prichit Maharaj is asking the question to Shukadeva Goswami. We've got an attitude about Krishna as if he doesn't know what he's doing. And then Krishna comes right out and says, if I see you're sincere and you're too attached, I give you my special mercy. I take everything away. So that makes us even more afraid. He himself is describing his tactics. But if we understand what is real wealth, then we become more attracted to Krishna. Just like once I understood my mother's motivations, then I became appreciative. An essential part of bhakti is understanding Krishna's methodology, why he does things the way he does with devotees. Otherwise, we're going to become intimidated. That's the right word, intimidated. Why did this devotee suddenly leave his body? Why was that devotee in an accident or suddenly had terminal cancer? Or why are these things happening? Even Bhishma Dev was wondering about these things in terms of the Pandavas. Just see, Arjuna, the famous fighter with the Gandiva bow, Yudhisthira is Dharmaraj personified, religion personified. Bhima, the famous fighter with the club. Draupadi is practically the goddess of fortune. And Krishna is there with them all the time. Yet they went through so many tribulations. I can't understand it. Bhishma Dev's conclusion was that the plan of the Lord is inconceivable. So it's so easy to develop an attitude about Krishna, resentment and fear. We go on with our mouth speaking the philosophy. We glorify the deity, but in our heart there's fear. We're intimidated. We're not sure. Once we understand what is the real wealth, then we become grateful. Prahlad Maharaj understood that. I just want to be your unconditional servant. Hiranyakashipu had no idea what is real wealth. The wealth of bhakti is so exquisite that there are even discussions and arguments about comparing the wealth of the different parts of the spiritual world. After Rathayatra, during the Hara Panchami festival, Lord Chaitanya was having a discussion with his associates. They were watching Lakshmi Devi attack the servitors of Lord Jagannath, because Lakshmi Devi and the servitors of Lord Jagannath couldn't understand why does Jagannath want to go to Gundicha Mandir, which is Vrindavan? What's so special about Vrindavan? Dwarka is so opulent. Jagannath Puri is Dwarka. Its wealth is unlimited. What is there in Vrindavan? Why does Lord Jagannath want to see just some flowers and fruits, the gardens of Srimati Radharani? What's the big deal? So, Srivas Thakur, who is Narada Muni, he began to speak of the glories of Vaikuntha. Just see my Lakshmi Devi. Just see the throne of jewels she sits on. Have you seen ever such Aishvarya, such opulence? And then Srivas Thakur started to speak about Vrindavan. Vrindavan, what's going on there? Clumps of feathers on the ground, flowers, some minerals from the hills. What is so special about Vrindavan? Whereas the wealth of my goddess of fortune is unimaginable. Lord Chaitanya cautioned Shrivas Thakur, you know, you're becoming overwhelmed by your identity as Narada Muni. Narada Prakriti, or Narada Swabhava. Your nature as Narada Muni is really dominating. But don't you know whom you're talking to? You're talking to Srup Damodar. He's a pure devotee of Braj. He doesn't know anything about the opulence of Vaikuntha. So then Srup Damodar took his cue and began to elaborate on the wealth of Vrindavan. He explained that all the trees are desire trees, kalpavrikshas. They can fulfill any desire. The cows are kamadenus. They can fulfill any desire. Although they just give milk because that's all the residents of Vrindavan want. Although the kamadenus can fulfill any desire, the Brijvasis just want the milk. The ground is Chintamani, the most precious spiritual gem. Every step is a dance. Every word is a song. The water's like nectar. Even the Brahma Jyoti, the Brahman effulgence, is there in Goloka Vrindavan in his spiritual form. So this is the opulence of Vrindavan, that even the impersonal Brahman shows its personal form in Goloka Vrindavan. So Srup Damodar made the conclusion that the opulence of Vrindavan is like an ocean. The opulence of Dwarka is just a drop compared to that ocean. Shrivas Thakur admitted his defeat. And he showed his defeat by dancing in ecstasy, slapping his armpits and making funny sounds. And then there was an extraordinary kirtan. And in the midst of that kirtan, Lord Chaitanya revealed himself as Srimati Radharani. And Nityananda Prabhu saw this from afar, and he offered his prayers. He didn't come close. It was a very intimate, confidential scene. Nityananda respected that. Just like in Goloka Vrindavan, Balaram has his consorts, and Krishna has his, and they have their meetings in the forest in different places of the forest. They don't mix in terms of these dealings. So Nityananda respected the ecstatic mood of Lord Chaitanya, kept his distance, and offered prayers. So we see that even comparing different parts of the spiritual world, we need some deep understanding of what real wealth is. And how do we compare the wealth of the material world to such spiritual glories of bhakti? The more we hear this, the more we become attracted. That is how contagious hearing about Krishna and his glories is. The more you hear, the more you start to get security. Therefore, we're having this morning Bhagavatam class. It imparts security to the devotees. Through the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam, the devotees are actually associating with Krishna. And you're feeling, yes, you're feeling confident in Krishna. And that is what we require. As soon as we slacken off with our hearing and chanting, you can notice the confidence goes down. We get on the mental platform. Even worse, we get on the physical platform. We've lost sight of the goal. As soon as you start to hear and chant about Krishna again, your vision clears up. This is an important lesson for us to learn as we go through any struggles or difficult phases in our devotional life. Once we understand that we can make it through any challenging circumstance just by increasing our reliance on Krishna, we never forget that lesson. And Krishna knows that. We actually later appreciate the challenging situations because we got the realization that I, by Krishna's grace, could handle it by taking more shelter of Krishna. This is becoming mature in bhakti, that you know Krishna is there to take shelter of. No matter how my body and mind are screaming at me, no matter how material nature is trying to overpower me, it may feel sometimes that the illusory energy is just pulsating inside your mind and body. But you can rise above all that by taking shelter of Krishna's name, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the real social security program. You'll never forget it. And you become grateful to Krishna. I can see, indeed, by your grace, I can cross over all the obstacles of conditioned life. Just as Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. If you remain conscious of me, by my grace, you'll pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life. And conditioned life is an obstacle course. There's no doubt about that. And therefore, we're afraid. Will I really make it? And sometimes we look around and see that persons we never expected, they have some difficulty or problems. So it's natural out of humility that we feel, what about me? If that happened to him or her, what about me? But you see, everyone, young or old, neophyte or advanced devotee, has the opportunity to take more shelter of Krishna. Those who do that are actually getting the real wealth from the process of bhakti. You know how to take shelter in any situation. And you never forget that. I can cross over the difficulties. I can make it through the attacks of the body and mind if I simply take advantage of all the support that Krishna is giving through the bhakti system. If we're contaminated by desires for material success and fulfillment, it's not then really possible to take full shelter of Krishna because we're a little wary. Krishna, are you really going to fulfill this desire? We don't trust Krishna with material desires. Because Krishna himself says, when my devotee approaches me with material desires, I'm not unintelligent. I fulfill that desire in such a way that the devotee never asks for that thing again. Well, that's not good. He should fulfill the desire again and again and again and again and again. What is this, fulfilling the desire so I never ask for it again? Krishna wants to give us something better. Just like a good parent sends the child to school, even though the child doesn't want to go, because the parent knows, materially speaking, it's best for the child's future that he or she has an education. So it may seem severe to the child, but it's actually the love of the parent. Another example Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives is when you have some kind of cut or abrasion and a doctor may put some ointment on the cut, and what's the first reaction? It stings. But you know that the stinging is for your, it's just an effect of the medicine curing you. So you don't like punch the doctor. What did you put that stuff on me for? You know, okay. In fact, psychologically, you even think that because the sting is there, it must be working. So pharmaceutical companies know that. And so they, in their ointments and salves, they have some brands that actually unnecessarily sting because the pharmaceutical companies know you'll have faith that way. Oh, there's a sting to it. It must be doing its job. So we'll give that credit to ointments, but we won't give it to Krishna. As soon as it stings, oh, why is Krishna doing that to me? It's not fair. And Krishna is simply trying to arrange for the purification of our material desires, and so we come closer to him. Let's consider Vrikasura, a classic example. Let's try to look at that Leela deeply. Vrikasura wanted a material benediction. And he consulted, who's best at that? Vishnu, Brahma, Shiva? So he was told that better approach Brahma and Shiva because they easily give material benedictions. Sometimes they curse easily, sometimes they benedict easily, so better focus on one of them. So Rika chose Shiva, and he went to Kedarnath in the Himalayas, and he made a sacrificial yajna, and he was going to please Lord Shiva to get a benediction. So what did he do? You know, he began cutting off his own flesh and offering it into the yajna fire. 6 days he did that. This is how determined he was. But Lord Shiva didn't appear. This shows you the psychology of expecting something for your material benefit. You look at your watch, you look at the calendar, okay, I've been doing this yajna for a certain amount of time. Where's the result? When has Krishna appeared to me? So Rika was thinking like that. 6 days and Shiva hasn't appeared. Something is wrong here. This is the nature of lust. I've got to have it now. I can't wait. I've done all the right things to fulfill my desire. Okay, where's the fulfillment? We say that to ourselves. We say that to other persons. We say it to the world. We say it to Krishna. Where is my fulfillment? So Rika was preoccupied with that. And so finally he decided to make the ultimate sacrifice. He would cut off his own head and let it fall into the sacrificial fire. Surely that would do something. Now, this sounds totally grotesque, but if you look at what human beings do to themselves for the sake of material progress and advancement, you also see grotesque things. You see how human beings don't care that they're destroying their health, they still smoke cigarettes, they still eat heaps of meat. Even though the knowledge is there, they still do all these things. They destroy their families through divorce, even though they know the kids are going to be screwed up. They destroy their environment. They destroy their own nations and societies. Even though they can see that such behaviors are not only unprogressive, but they're destructive, still they can't stop. So this is Rika. Cutting off my flesh for 6 days, now I'll cut off my head. And Lord Shiva did appear. Now Prabhupada points out a very interesting thing. He says that it's not extraordinary that Lord Shiva appeared to stop him from cutting his head off. Any gentleman seeing someone about to kill themselves will intervene. We hear examples of that all the time. Someone's trying to commit suicide, jump from the Golden Gate Bridge, and others are trying to stop the person. So Prabhupada points out it wasn't extraordinary that Lord Shiva appeared. He's just doing something that anyone would do. But, of course, Vrikasura took this as, I have achieved the supreme destination. Lord Shiva has appeared. He's going to ask me, what benediction do I want? And indeed that happened, and Vrikasura asked, make it so that whosoever head I touch, it cracks into pieces. So again, you say, this is really grotesque. I mean, sometimes Krishna book just gets a bit out there. But look at society today. Look what their scientific advancement is going for. Look what it's doing. Half of the budget of the United States of America, more than half, goes to military buildup and defense. That means so much of your tax money is going for how to kill people. So how is that so different from Rika asking for the benediction, whosoever head I touch will crack open? At least the taxpayers didn't have to fund it. So, you know what happened. Immediately he began to pursue Lord Shiva, to touch Lord Shiva's head and destroy Lord Shiva. And he chased Lord Shiva all over the universe. And no one could help. Lord Shiva was trembling with fear. So finally Lord Shiva goes to Swetadweep, the spiritual planet in the material world where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. And so as Lord Shiva, who's running, and Rika's behind him, as they come in the sight of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord takes the form of a young brahmachari boy, and he begins to speak to Vrika with very soothing words. Oh, I see that you're running so vigorously. I see that you're really expending so much energy. Why is that? Please come, sit down, rest. Now, ordinarily, Vrika, he's so attached to fulfilling his mad desires, he would not stop to rest. He wanted to touch Lord Shiva's head and kill him. But because the Lord's words were so soothing, and also the Lord has his energy, his illusory energy to cover over Vrika, Vrika, he just became momentarily at ease. All right, I'll sit down and rest. And then the Lord told him, you know about the body. The body is the most important thing. You shouldn't tire your body out. The body is the main thing in life. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead doing the necessary in the situation. He knew, of course, demoniac persons are attached to the body as the all in all. There's one famous New Age writer, Deepak such and such. And I saw it my own eyes in an interview. He said, if you want to know what's right to do in your life, just consult your body. If your body gives a good feeling, it's right. If your body gives a bad feeling, it's wrong. This is really Southern California. Trust your body. Your body is the means to decide what is good and bad in your life. Just trust your body and how it feels. So, this is demoniac philosophy. And Krishna, he spoke that to Vrika because Vrika's a demon and Krishna was trying to save Lord Shiva. Think of your body. You're tired. We are the body. The body is the most important thing. Your sensual feelings. Just sit down. Relax. So then Vrika sat down and he began to explain what happened. You see, I got this benediction from Lord Shiva and now I want to touch his head and I'm chasing him all around. And Krishna said to him, well, how can you trust Lord Shiva? He's the Lord of the ghosts and hobgoblins. He's a very dodgy character, you know. Do you really think that's so? And the Lord was speaking in such a beguiling, clever way that Vrika was totally bewildered by his words, by his presentation. And then the Lord said, all right, I know you think that Shiva is Jagat Guru. He's the spiritual master of the universe. I've already explained to you about his devious nature, leader of the ghosts and hobgoblins. For some reason, you trust him, but it doesn't make sense. Think about it. It doesn't make sense. And anyway, here's a way you can prove it. And you'll find out where he's really at, where Shiva's really at. You touch your hand to your own head. And then that'll be the scientific experiment. Be scientific. Don't have faith. Just touch your own head. And that'll prove that Lord Shiva's a liar. And once you prove he's a liar, then you can kill him for telling such lies. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds that the Lord was implying to Vrika that, of course, it's Shiva. He can come back to life after you kill him. But anyway, at least you'll have killed him and taught him a lesson, even though he can come back to life. So in any case, you're going to kill him. You're going to see he's a liar. Just touch your own head, and we'll get on with it. And, of course, the demon touched his own head, and that was that. So these examples from Krishna Lila aren't as far-fetched as we think. We have to look in our heart and see. The Hiranyakashipu principle, the Vrikasura principle. We want fulfillment of our desires. Of course, if you approach Krishna with material desires, that is fortunate in one sense. From a higher sense, it's unfortunate. But at least by approaching Krishna for our material desires, we make a connection with Krishna. That's how the acharyas explain it. It's not advisable to approach Krishna for material fulfillment, but at least in your doing that, you establish a connection and there can be an opportunity for further purification. Hiranyakashipu is not interested in purification. He wants what he wants from Brahma. He's going to get it somehow or another through extortion, round the back, this way, that way. And he's going to terrorize the whole universe. His happiness will never come. His peace of mind will never come. His fulfillment will never come. But he doesn't understand that. And this is also our problem. We'll never get the eternal peace that devotion gives as long as we put so much stock in material fulfillment. We have to deprogram ourselves. And that takes a career of applying the bhakti process in our life. And certainly we'll see the results, especially, as we said, during difficult times, challenging times, if we get the realization that taking shelter Krishna brought me through, oh, that is the greatest wealth. We almost become unstoppable by Krishna's grace when you have that realization. I was down. I was being pounded by the material energy. I was in a difficult situation, health challenges, this challenges, that challenges. But I took more shelter of Krishna, and I'm here to say I'm better for it all. That is real wealth.